Morning. Today's daf in Erevin Pei Beis. We are in Pei Alf Amud Beis. We're finishing up this morning, seventh parak of the Masechta. And Yirtzeh Hashem, later this morning, we're going to be beginning the eighth parak. We are here at the end, finishing up our discussion regarding Eruv V'Chatzeros. Eruv V'Chatzeros is focused here in this Masechta, both in the sixth and seventh parakim. And so here at the end of the seventh parak, so we're finishing up some of the more basic issues regarding Eruv V'Chatzeros. The contribution has to be of bread for an Erev Chatzeros, as we've already established. We saw Machlokas at the bottom of Pehamid Aleph. Sorry, the bottom of Pehamid Beis. We saw Machlokas in terms of whether or not the bread has to be made up of whole loaves, or could you even use Prusos? Can you use broken pieces? We passed an halacha like Rabbi Yoshua, that there has to be whole loaves. Why does the Erev have to be made up of whole loaves? The Gemara says on Pei Aleph, Amid Aleph, it's because we want to reduce the amount of Eva animosity that exists between people. If the requirement is that if the allowances is that people can contribute both whole rolls and broken pieces, so people are going to have ill will one against the other if I see somebody who's bringing a broken piece. The Mishnah on the bottom of Pei Alef Amud Aleph talks about paying somebody to make a contribution for you for the Eruv Chatzeros. Meaning you don't have bread on hand, give a person money. And tell them to go buy me some bread. So under most circumstances, it would be okay. However, if that person that you give money to happens to be the baker of the town who lives in your chatzer, so that presents a problem. The Mishnah and Machlokas on this scenario. So Rabbi Eliezer says it's fine, but the Chachamim say it's not good. And why isn't it good? So as we explained yesterday, because as far as the baker is concerned, so he views the money as transactional, which means to say that he's not really doing you a favor per se. He's just simply selling you some bread. But then we get into transaction halachas, which is that you just gave him money. The money by itself is not a kinyan. Kinyan, when it comes to metalka, is mashicha. So you gave him money. He didn't give you the bread yet. So you don't have an ownership over that bread. And in order to contribute to the Erev Chatzeros, you have to actually you have to give bread that you owned. So that is the sheet of the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees, and yesterday we did spend a good amount of time trying to understand the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, even though that is not the accepted halacha, but the Gemara endeavored yesterday to understand Rabbi Eliezer. With that stated, we're going to pick it up where we left off yesterday. Umo din b'shar kol adam. Now, if this were anybody else, if this weren't the baker, then it would be fine. Meaning, because when it comes to any other person, so it's not transactional, meaning he's going to do you a favor. You give him money to buy bread for the Eruv, so this is not as transactional, and so therefore it'd be fine. My shar kol adam, so the Gemara asked the question. We say anybody else, what do we mean? I'm a Rav, kol adam. I'm a Rav balabais. So Rav says, we're talking just simply about somebody who's not a baker. Just tam, a balabais. V'chein amar shmo, a balabais, ta amar shmo lo shanu ala nachtom. The halacha of the Mishnah, the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim in the Mishnah, that's specific to a baker. Ava balabais kona. But when it comes to a balabai, so the kinyan works. V'amar shmo lo shanu ala ma'a. Ava kli kona. Now, just a couple more details in terms of the halachas of kinyanim, transactional halachas. So let's say you go to the baker, you don't give the baker money, but you give the baker a kli. So what happens over here? We have what's called a kinyan sudr. Kinyan sudr means that if we do an exchange, and it doesn't even have to be a barter, meaning if it's time a barter, so that also works. But we're talking over here where it's a symbolic transaction, right? Like we're used to by kinyan sudr. You pick up any object of value, and you basically you swap hands. So that kind of transaction occurs immediately. So the moment you do a kinyan sudr, so you become now immediately the owner of the bread. So then that works. Also, the language in which you use to the baker, that's also going to be significant. Let's say you don't say zachali, which simply means I want to purchase some bread. Now we're working with the regular rules of kinyanim, which is that if you hand the money, the kinyan hasn't occurred yet, which creates the problems as we already explained. But instead of that, you say aravli. You go to the baker and say, look, I want you to make an erev on my behalf, and you give him the money. So under those circumstances, it works. Why? Because now the baker understands this is not strictly transactional. The baker now understands that he's acting as an agent. So as agency, so that works. That would work as him making a shliach so that you can participate in the erev. Good. So we significantly limited the scope of the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes that when you give money to the baker, so it doesn't work. So now what we just learned together is, well, it depends. If you give him, instead of money, give him a kli, meaning king siddur, so then it would work. If you gave him money, but you said to him, I want you to be ma'ariv on my behalf, so that would work as well. All right, so we limited the scope of the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'medvar mamor. Now, is there a consent form? Are people in the Erev, in the Chatzar, so do they have to sign some sort of consent form? Or let's not be that formal, although this is a formality. Let's just simply say, do they need to be notified that they are making contributions to the Erev? So Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah strongly opined on this issue. Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah says that when it comes to Eruv Echatzeros, so they don't need consent. The only time a person needs consent, if somebody is going to be Ma'ariv on their behalf, is only Eruv Tchum, not Eruv Echatzeros. Why? So here the Mishnah, on the very top of Pei Alpha Mid Beis, quotes the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, because by Eruv Chatzeros it's a Zchus, Zachal Adam, Shalom Befanav, that if something is only going to be a positive and a benefit for an individual, so you don't have to tell them about it. You're going to do good on behalf of somebody, so you don't need his consent. It's understood that he wants it. So when it comes to Erev Tchum, it's not all good. So you're extending in one direction, but you are reducing in another direction. So by Erev Tchum, it's not all good. So it's not Zachon La'adam Shalom B'fanav. It's a little bit of Zchus and a little bit of Chova. There you need consent. But when it comes to Eruv Echatzeros, you don't need consent. That's Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara's comment over here, I'm a Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Shmuel. So here the Amora Rabbi Yehuda says, B'shem Shmuel, halachika Rabbi Yehuda. That the halacha over here, in fact, falls like Rabbi Yehuda. V'lo od, halakom makom shashan, Rabbi Yehuda be'erivin, halachika moso. And as another Mesorah that he has in the name of Shmuel, is that anytime you have a machlokas in Mishnayos, and Rabbi Yehuda is a participant in that machlokas, so then the halacha falls like Rabbi Yehuda, and that's true anywhere in Erivin. Amalei Rav Chana Bagdasa leRav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Afilu b'mavush anit l'karosav lechayav. Really, let's test out how far that goes. This question was posed by Rav Chana from Baghdad. So he says, I don't understand. Let's say we have a mavui where the mavui loses either its lechi or its korah on Shabbos. So that means going into Shabbos, the mavui was set up with a proper lechi or a proper korah, and then it gets lost on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yehuda took a position, a lenient position, we learned earlier in the Masechta, which is, Kevesh Hutra Hutra, since it goes into Shabbos in a state of correction, so it remains in that state for the balance of Shabbos, even though the Lechi or the Korah are now gone. So, are you ready? Are you prepared to tell me that the Halacha falls like Rabbi Yehuda in that case as well? So, Amalei Be'eruv and Amarti Lach V'lo Me'mechitzos. He says, no, that's not a Halacha in Erevin, that's a Halacha in Mechitzos. Now, I know at this point in time in the Masechta, so now we have it clear. Meaning that Erev is the unification of everybody. It's the incorporation of everybody. Good, that's one series of halachas. But another set of halachas is, when can people incorporate? That's only when there are mechitzas that are set up, the walls that make this area into a rishus yachid. So basically the Gemara says, look, those are two different areas of halacha. The mechitzas and the definition of a rishus yachid, that's one area of halacha. I'm not saying the halachas like Rav Yehuda in those areas of halacha. I'm talking about now the Erev, the incorporation. There the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. So good. So we found the limits of how far we're ready to say the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Amalei Rav Acha Bered, the Rav Rav Ashi halacha. So Michlal de Pligi. So he says, now look, you just told me that over here in our Mishnah, the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. You know the impression you're giving is that Rav Yehuda argues with somebody. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'hamar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, komakum shamar Rabbi Yehuda, emasai, uvameh, b'mishasinu, ena ela lafarish, divrei chachamim. So, and meanwhile, we have a tradition by Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, that when you look at any Mishnah, and in the Mishnah, if you were to find Rabbi Yehuda prefacing his remarks with either the words, b'medvar mamorim, or emasai, he's not coming to argue with the Tanakhama, he's just coming to explain the Tanakhama. So here in our Mishnah, before Rav Yehuda gets introduced, what does he say? I'm Rav Yehuda. You can look just on the top of the Amud, three lines down. I'm Rav Yehuda, b'medvar mamorim. So according to the traditions of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, he's not arguing with the Tanakhama. He's explaining the Tanakhama. And so you have to paskin the halacha like Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda doesn't have anyone to argue with. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? V'lo pligi. V'anan tanan nitosu aleim mosifu mezakav etzarech lo'odia. So the Gemara says, let's go back one daf. Let's go to Pei Amud Beis, the Mishnah on Pei Amud Beis. So there is a Tana in that Mishnah clearly who's espousing a view that when somebody joins our chatzer, you have a new resident in the chatzer, and now you're making an erev on his behalf, you have to notify him. So of course there's somebody who argues. Look back at the previous Mishnah. You don't need a long memory. Here a short memory will do. And you know that somebody argues with Rabbi Yehuda. So how can you tell me that nobody argues with Rabbi Yehuda? The Gemara says, you know, I could still try to argue the point. Hasam b'chatzer shebein shnei mavos. So the Gemara says, well, maybe over there it's the chatzer that exists between two mavuis. The chatzer has options in terms of which mavui it's going to go out to. So maybe over there, the reason why you have to notify is because we're talking about a chatzer where it's not clear exactly which direction that the members of the chatzer are going into, which mavui they're going into. So maybe over there, there has to be notification. But in general, there doesn't have to be notification. So the Gemara is trying to maintain this position that maybe Rav Yehuda is not arguing with anybody. The Gemara says, and it's as much as you try to argue it, the Gemara says it's simply not the case. So the Gemara says no, because if you go back to yesterday's daf, so you remember 2 days ago, really, you remember that a comment that was made by another Amora is that there is a machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. The Mishnah on Pei definitely argues with Rav Yehuda, who's found in the Mishnah on Daf Pei Aleph. So the Gemara says the Mamish is a machlokas between the two, and the words Bamedvar Mamorim are not indicative of the fact that Rav Yehuda is just coming to explain. No, he's actually arguing with somebody, and the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Okay. Zos Omeris, you're right, okay, I'm sorry. Ella. So, Gavra Agavra Karamis, Marsav Repligi, Marsav Lo Pligi. And the Gemara says, and what got us into this whole discussion to begin with? The comment of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that every single time that Rabbi Yehuda opens up in the Mishnah with the words, Bamedvar Mamorim, so that's coming to teach me that he's coming to explain not to be Cholek? Okay, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Not everyone agrees with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. In fact, we could say that Shmuel doesn't agree with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And the Marsav Repligi, Marsav Lo Pligi. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is of the opinion that when you open up with the words Bamedvar Mamorim, so that is Mefarish, not being Mechalik. But Shmuel doesn't have to agree with that. Okay, so where we land right now in the Gemara is that the Halacha falls like Rabbi Yehuda. Is Rabbi Yehuda arguing with another Tana? So Rav Yehoshua ben Levi may maintain that no, he doesn't, but Shmuel maintains that he does, and despite the fact that there are others who argue with Rav Yehuda, but the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Okay, Gufa. We are now on the top of Pei Beis Amud Aleph, continuing in this thought that when Rav Yehuda opens up with the words Bamedvar Mamurim, is he coming to argue with the Tanakama or explain the Tanakama? I'm Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. Komakum Shama Rav Yehuda Emasai Uva Meh B'Mishnah Senu Eino El Lafarish Divrei Chachamim. So again, just to restate the position of Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, when Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah is introduced with the words either by Medvar Mamurim or Emasai, it's just there to qualify. He's not arguing with the Tanakama. That's Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. Rav Yochanan Amar Emasai Lafarish Ubameh Lachlok. And Rav Yochanan actually has a split. When a Mishnah opens Rav Yehuda's words with the words Emasai, that's a qualifier. When he says by Medvar Mamurim, so that is a position of Chaluka. He's arguing with the Tanakama. The Emasai Lafarish Hu Vatanan. So the Gemara says, so interesting. So Emasai, so that's a qualifier. So the Gemara says, I'm not sure if you're right about that. As we look now in the third parak of Sanhedrin. In the third parak of Sanhedrin, so the Mishnah over there discusses Eidus and Psule Eidus. So who can testify in a court of law? Who cannot testify? Who's disqualified from testifying? So the Gemara over there has a debate in terms of a person who's an avarya and who's a sinner and violates other isurim of the Torah. Machlokas Abai and Rava over there in that Gemara. But meanwhile, the Mishnah brings down cases in which a person is a ganav midrabanan, right? He is involved in not stealing technically, but basically trying to take other people's money and doing so in unscrupulous manners in which, even though he didn't violate Nisr Torah per se, but because he shows such a desire for money, so therefore a discussion to be had whether or not we can trust him to be honest in a court of law. Once a person has shown that he has a real desire for money, so then the concern honestly would be that he may take a bribe in order to testify. That's the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. We're learning the Mishnah now, Ve'elohein Apsulim. So the people who are disqualified, a mesachib could be someone who gambles. Umava b'rib is someone who lends with interest. Umafricha yonim, somebody who races pigeons, right? Another form of gambling. Visochre shvius, somebody who does commercial activity with the produce of the Shemitah year, which you're not allowed to do the produce of the Shemitah, you're not allowed to make commercial use out of the produce of the Shemitah year. It's la'achla v'lo l'schara. You can only eat it, and you can't do business with it. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. And if we were learning Sanhedrin right now, we would, the Gemara does, we would be spending a lot of time with why these four categories, gambling is mentioned in the Mishnah two times, why is gambling mentioned twice, all this to be discussed in the Gemara Sanhedrin. We're interested in the Mishnah right now for one reason, and that is the Rabbi Yehuda who throws in the following, Amasai, when is this a case? So now, let's put on our rules that we just learned together in our Gemara. When you see the word Amasai, what does that mean? Arguing, explaining. So you go back and you see what we just saw in the opinions above. According to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Amasai is coming to explain. Even according to Rabbi Yochanan, Amasai is coming to explain. Good. So according to both Amorim, when you see the word Amasai, it's Eno Ella Lefarish. It's there just to explain. So I'm Rav Yehuda Amasai. When is it true? Meaning when involved in these activities, in these seedy activities, when is it that you're disqualified? Bizman Shein Lo Umnas Elohu. That's only when this is your only profession. You're a professional gambler. So then you can't testify. Aval Yesh Lo Umnas Elohu Arei Ze Kasher. But let's say your gambling is only on the side. So occasionally you take a ride down to the Hard Rock and you gamble. But you have a steady job. So according to Rav Yehuda, so you can testify. That would be fine. What's the svara behind Rav Yehuda? Rashi over here. Rashi's language is beautiful over here. Rashi says, "Kasavra Rav Yehuda." Rashi, "Dibra amaschu b'zman she'in lahem umnos elahu." So Rashi writes, "The kasavra Rav Yehuda smachta shehu nismach al dato shehu yitzlchenu val oso asmachta hi matana kanya v'lav gazlanim ninhu." So first of all, Rashi describes why gambling itself is not stealing. So Rashi over here describes a smachta, and this would be a nice time to go much deeper into the world of a smachta and understand the principles and concepts of a smachta. However, it is a daf. I want to get through the daf, so I'm not going to spend the time doing so. Here is a tosos, same tosos that you have in Sanhedrin on Chav Dalet. So tosos over here goes over the same machlokus between Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, the Ri, in terms of when a smachta is kona, when a smachta is not kona. So there's much to discuss over here, but I'm bypassing the discussion for now, as we're just going to concentrate on the Gemara and finishing the daf. Anyway, Rashi says that gambling itself is not stealing. So then how do you understand Shitas Rav Yehuda? Rashi continues to write, and the reason why when you have a full-time gambler, even though the act of gambling is not theft, but a full-time gambler cannot testify, the kaven dein makirin ubikin betorach v'tzar b'nei adam. Because what are you doing when you're gambling? So you're not stressing, although I'm sure the gambler would argue at this point, but you're not really stressing. In other words, you're not holding down a steady job. You don't know what it means to work and to go through the pain of a regular person. Einan chasin al chavrehim. So it just doesn't give you the proper empathy where somebody else now is in a courtroom and either as a plaintiff or a defendant, and you can't really feel what they're going through. So at that point in time, so you can't relate to them. So and now you're going to cause a loss of money for them. So it's not going to bother you because you simply can't relate. You're not holding down a job like everybody else is, right? Rashi concludes, Melahafsi dan mamon. And even though it's going to cost a loss of money for that other person, but you simply can't relate to that person. That's why you can't testify. This is Shitas Rav Yehuda, is that Eino Asuko b'Yeshuva Sha'olam, you're just simply not with the rest of the world. You're not in the program. And so therefore, you just simply don't have the proper empathy, and somebody loses money, it's not going to bother you. And you won't necessarily be honest. Okay, good. So that's Shitas Rav Yehuda regarding the gambler who, if full-time gambling, can't testify. Part-time gambler is allowed to testify. Good. Now, after having learned this Mishnah, how many opinions exist in this Mishnah? So right now, what seems to be the correct answer is, there's only one opinion in the Mishnah. Meaning because Rav Yehuda over here is not arguing with the Tanakhama, Rav Yehuda is qualifying the Tanakhama. He opened up with the word Amasai. So we have over here a pirush on the Tanakama. So v'tini alah bebraisa. Now, on top of that also, a braisa. So far, there's no problem. So far, we can say that Rav Yehuda is just coming to explain the Tanakama. But here comes the problem. Problem is we have a braisa, and the braisa writes, v'chachamim omrim bein shu in lo umnus ella hi, bein shu yesh lo umnus shelo hi, harei ze pasol. There is an opinion out there, the braisa tells us, that even if gambling is done on the side, he's disqualified. Okay, so now we have a problem, because now this braisa has taught us that somebody's arguing with Rav Yehuda. Now, presumably, that somebody is the Tanakama of our Mishnah in Sanhedrin. And so here now, we have Rav Yehuda saying the word Amasai, and it seems like he's arguing with the Tanakama that goes against both Rav Yeshua ben Levi, and it goes against Rav Yochanan as well. So the Gemara says, Ahi the Rav Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Tarfon hi. So the Gemara says, no, the Tanakama and Rav Yehuda are not in disagreement. Rav Yehuda is coming to explain the Tanakama. The Braisa you just quoted me, that Braisa belongs to a different Tana altogether. Notably, the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. The Tanya we learned in the Braisa, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. Rav Yehuda quotes Rabbi Tarfon. And that is, La'olam ein echad mehem nazir, lefi she'ein nazirus ella lehafla. So over here, the Braisa, really cryptic, super short. The Braisa is describing the following scenario. Guy's walking down the street, so he happens to be sporting some long hair. And I turn to my friend and I say, you see that guy over there? He's a Nazir. And my friend says to me, he's not a Nazir. He's just a hippie. And so we go back and forth. Okay. Doesn't sound like the most productive use of our time, but that doesn't matter. Okay. And so we're debating whether or not this person's a Nazir or this person is not a Nazir. Finally, I say to the person, you know, I really think I'm right. In fact, you know what? I'm ready to bet on it. If I'm right, I'm going to be a Nazir. And the other person is convinced that he's right. He says, no, I'm right. And if I'm right, I'll be a Nazir. So both of us now are attaching a neder of Naziros, but on an eventuality that currently we don't know about. Okay, sounds a little bit like Breira. But anyway, but that's what's happening. And Rabbi Tarfon in a Braisa says, neither of them going to be a Nazir. Now, one of them has to be right. It doesn't matter. And even if we learn which one of them is right, still, neither of them are going to be a Nazir. Why? Because the Torah's usage of, when introducing us to Nazirus, is the word hafla'a. Hafla'a means clarity. When a person declares himself to be a Nazir, it has to be that at the point of declaration, he fully is aware and understands what he's going to take upon himself. If he's attaching some outcome to his Nazirus, and we don't know what the outcome is yet, that's not Nazirus, that's not hafla'a, that's not clarity. So, Alma, what do you see from this sheet of Rabbi Tarfon? Alma came to Mesafkalei, Inazir, Ilo Nazir, who, since at the point of declaration, he's simply uncertain, Lo Meshabit Nafshe. So, at that point in time, that's not a commitment. So, Achinami came to Lo Yadi, Kani Lo Kane, Lo Gamar Machne. Same thing with the gambler. According to Rabbi Tarfon, the gambler, since he doesn't know the outcome at the time of the gambling, so therefore, it is not a commitment. The money has not legitimately exchanged hands between one gambler and the next gambler, and so therefore qualifies as stealing. So the disqualification of gambling, according to Rabbi Tarfon, is really a function of theft. It's geneva, really gazela. So according to Rabbi Tarfon, the gambler is no good, and it doesn't matter if he's holding down a steady job. In other words, if you held down a steady job and you steal on the side, you're pasul eidus. Same thing with the gambler, according to Rabbi Tarfon. So the Gemara says, yes, it's true. The Braisa you quoted to me is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda. But that's not expressing the Tanakama's viewpoint. That's expressing another Tana's viewpoint. Notably, the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Okay. Hadron l'chalon, that is the end of the seventh parak of our Masechta. And now we have the Schos starting the eighth parak of Erevin. Ketzah mishtadfim b'tchomim. So how do you make a shituf when it comes to tchom? Meiniach. Now, here in the eighth parak, so it's going to be like an assortment of halachas. I should have said this before I started the Mishnah. It should have been it's going to be an assortment of halachas that still are going to obviously deal with Erevin, but we're not going to be, we're not going to stay on one particular topic. So the Mishnah starts off, Ketzah Meshafim B'Tchomim. So how does everyone make a combination for an Erev Tchom? Meaning, so it's not one person that wants to make an Erev Tchom, it's a number of people. So meniach is a chavis v'amer is elachol b'nei iri lachol mi sheyelech lebeis ha'avel o lebeis hamishta V'chol shekiba alav mibo yomot mishetachshach aser shein marvi mishetachshach. So let's say you have a group. For whatever reason, and well, we're actually going to get there in just a moment. For when I'm going to qualify for whatever reason. But for whatever reason, let's say the whole city now is going to have to walk in a certain direction. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a barrel, I'm going to put it down in the Makam Shvisa, and I'm going to say, whoever wants to rely on this for the Erev Tchum, be my guest. And the Mishnah gives a couple of examples of why a group is going to want to go in a certain direction and is going to necessitate the making of an Erev Tchum in order to extend their area in which they can walk. So one example of the Mishnah is you're going to a Beis Aval. You're going to be Menachem Aval. Interesting, by the way, the Gemara elsewhere talks about doing the mitzvah of Nichum Avelam on Shabbos. The Gemara says that the Chachamim did allow it, but Bekoshi, meaning it's obviously it's really sad, meaning the circumstances obviously are very sad. But to encourage and to promote sadness on Shabbos, the Chachamim didn't love the idea, but obviously the benefit of Nichum Avelam, the Chachamim recognized, realized the obvious benefits of it, so they allow Nichum Avelam on Shabbos. Anyway, It's not formal. Meaning, we don't call it Nichum Avelam. You just simply you go in and with the just to give companionship. Anyway, all right, let's call it Nichum Avelam. Let's not try to get too fancy over here. Or Beis Mishta, or let's say Sheva Brachos. So under those circumstances, so we're basically talking about mitzvos. The Gemara is going to pick up on that. That the examples that are given in order to make an Erev Tchum are examples of mitzvos. Basically, you open the invitation. Anyone who wants to make usage of this Erev Tchum is allowed to do so. Now, if you, the Mishnah says, if you accept it before it gets dark, great. But Mishitechshach, but once it gets dark, so then it's too late. The Erev Tchum only will work during Banish Mashos, which means that you have to know about it and seemingly accept it before Shabbos begins. Okay? That's the simple pshat in the Mishnah. And much to discuss. So the first discussion of the Gemara Rav Yosef and Marvin Ella Dvar Mitzvah. So Rav Yosef's first commentary on the Mishnah is, look at the examples. The examples of making an Erev Tchum, Rav Yosef says they are just not nice examples. It's teaching us a halacha. Notably, a person can only make an Erev Tchum only if it's Dvar Mitzvah. So my Kamash Malan Tanin, L'chom Yishelech L'Beis Avol L'Beis HaMishta. So the Gemara says, okay, Rav Yosef, thank you, but don't we already see that in the Mishnah? The Gemara says, not necessarily. So it could very well be that the Mishnah is just giving good examples. The Mishnah is giving constructive examples. But if it were just for the Mishnah by itself, I wouldn't say that we're limited only to Dvar Mitzvah. The Mishnah just happens to give examples of mitzvahs. That's what I might have thought. Kamash Malan, no. The Mishnah is telling us a Tchum can only be established only for a Dvar Mitzvah. V'chol shekiba alav mibo yom, sham is minayin breira. Okay, so the Gemara says that let's say Shabbos morning, so at shul, somebody comes over to you and says, hey, are you walking over to the Sheva Brachos, right? What are you talking about? What Sheva Brachos? You know, in the town next over. So, with the Gabbai set up an Erev Tchum before Shabbos, and we're all going to walk over there based on the Erev Tchum. And now you're hearing this for the first time, and the Mishnah said, it's too late for you. Meaning you didn't know about the Erev Tchum going into Shabbos, and now it's too late for you to set up your Erev Tchum, or to allow others to set up an Erev Tchum for you. So the Mishnah says it doesn't work. Now the Gemara says this is a referendum on Breira. I know in our Masechta Breira comes up repeatedly, right? We discussed it extensively back on Daf Lamed Zayin, Lamed Ches, thereabouts. So it comes up again and again. And so the Gemara says, here we are now, what seems to be another referendum on Breira, because our Mishnah says it simply doesn't work. Because look, if we did subscribe to Breira, so the guy in Shabbos morning in Shul, once he learns about the Sheva Brachos, here's what he would say. If I would have known about this on Friday afternoon, of course I would have relied on the Erev Tchum. So why don't we say that retroactive now too, Erev Shabbos, so rely on the principle of Breira and say that the Erev Tchum should work for him as well. By virtue of the fact that the Mishnah says it doesn't work, it seems like a rejection of Breira. So our Mishnah seems to stand on the issue of Breira and reject the principle of Breira. So I'm Rav Ashi, hodio velo hodio katani. So Rav Ashi says, no, it's not a referendum on Breira. The Mishnah could be describing the following scenario. Hodi'uhu. The Mishnah could just simply say that he was notified about it before Shabbos. So that means to say that he may not have accepted it before Shabbos, but he was aware of it before Shabbos. So even though the decision is made later, but that doesn't rely heavily on Breira. That just simply is telling us that when he was told about it, so then at that point in time, he agreed, even if he didn't verbally agree at the time, but it could very well be that when he learned about it, at that point in time, there was already some sort of commitment. And the fact that on Shabbos morning, now for the first time, he's saying, I'm using the Tchum, it could very well be that that it goes back to Friday afternoon, because that's when he learned about it. But if he didn't know about it whatsoever, that's a different case. Okay, so the Gemara says, though, our Mishnah is not necessarily speaking to the, taking a stand on the issue of Breira. Amar Ravasi, the Gemara continues, Katan, Ben Shesh, Yote Be'eruv Imo. So now we're talking about dependency, and if you have a child, a young child, so he necessarily will follow whatever the Eruv is, specifically of his mother. So Ravasi says that if you have a child 6 years of age, Yote Be'eruv Imo. So he goes out with the Eruv of his mother, meaning to say that there's not the child at this point in time, such a dependence on the mother, so therefore whatever the mother did in terms of her Tchum Shabbos, so her son is necessarily going to follow whatever the mother's parameters are. Major the Gemara says, I'm bothered by the following. Katan shesarach li'imo yotze be'erev imo. V'shein sarach li'imo en yotze be'erev imo. So here, the Braisa tells us very clearly that if I have a katan who is sarach li'imo, dependent on the mother, so such a child is going to follow the parameters of the mother, but once the child is eino tzarich l'imo, obviously, right, a 7-year-old, 8-year-old still has dependency, but the term tzarich l'imo means like totally dependent on the mother. So once that total dependence goes away, so then the child doesn't necessarily follow the tchum of the mother. V'tananami gabi sukkah, ki agav nam by sukkah, we have a similar concept, katan shein tzarich l'imo, chai besukkah, that once the katan does not have full dependency on the mother, so then there's a mitzvah of chinuch, the child should be trained to sit in the sukkah. Ve'avinam bavizu katan shein tzarich l'imo, amrei debei rav yanai, kol shenifne ve'inima mekan chaso. So when is the child totally dependent on the mother? So one is when the child, after the child relieves himself, so then the mother wipes him. That's one way to try to frame the age. Rav Shimon Malakish Amar Kol Shenayer Ve'Eino Kare Ima. You wake up and you call for your mother. So Amos Agadachi Gedolam Nami Kare. Gemara has such a great line. The Gemara says who doesn't wake up and call for their mother? So the Gemara says Elak Ema Kol Shenayer Mishnasov Ve'Eino Kare Ima Ima. So no, in other words, we're talking about put yourself in a room with a child who's still in some sort of crib, right? Who just learned how to talk. So there, the calls for the mother don't stop. So that's the tzarich l'imo. That's total dependency. Vikama, and here we get to the punchline, which is what age are we talking about? So kabar arba, kabar chamesh. So we're talking 4, maybe we're talking 5. Okay, so we have just established that Sarach Le'imo is 4 or 5 years of age. Now, what comes out over here is that we have now Rav Asi at the beginning of the Sugya offering an opinion that 6 years of age is still Sarach Le'imo. And therefore, that total dependency means that whatever the mother's Erev is, that's going to be the child's Erev. And meanwhile, over here in the Braisa that we just quoted, the Braisa gives the age of 4 or 5, not 6 years of age. Not it's not a wild discrepancy, but still it's a discrepancy. So the Gemara's response is, we are now on the top of the Amud Beis. So Amar of Yeshua Bereid Ravidi Kikama Ravasi Kagon Shire Valav Aviv Litzafon V'imo L'daron Da'afila Bar Shesh Nami B'tzaf Sadima Nichale. So Rav Yeshua Bereid Ravidi says, look, Ravasi was talking about the following scenario. This child, Baruch Hashem, mother and father, it's got both, and this particular child now, mom made an Erev in one direction, dad made another Erev in another direction. Now, admittedly, right, it's not the best where the child now is, in this case, literally torn in two directions in terms of where he could go, but a 6-year-old would prefer the company of his mother over that of his father. Good. And I'll reserve all my jokes for another occasion. But anyway, but the Gemara says that's what Rav Asi was talking about. So under those circumstances, so if it's just a question of electing who to choose, mom or dad, so a six-year-old will choose mom over that of dad. So the Gemara says but as far as generally speaking, if we're talking about with no election necessary, and we're just talking about total dependency, so then the Bryce is right. 4 or 5 years of age, you have total dependency. After that, it's not considered total dependency. So the Gemara says, Meisvei, the Gemara says, I'm going to challenge you with the following Bryce. 4 lines from the top on. Pei Beis Amid Beis. Katan Shetzarach Le'imo. Yotze Be'iriv Imo Ad Sheish. So here, we're talking about a Katan who is totally dependent on mom. So wherever mom makes her Eriv, the child is going to go. And that's going to go till 6 years of age. Now, Tiyufta de Rav Yehoshua b'Rav Idi. Tiyufta. So the Gemara says, okay, so Rav Yehoshua b'Rei de Rav Idi. So he just suggested that Rav Asi was only talking about where there was a choice between mom and dad, which one he's going to elect. But in other words, but outside of that, there is no total dependency. Here in the Braisa speaks about total dependency even up until six. So this is clearly not working with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. I'm sorry, Rabbi Yehoshua b'Rei de Rabbi Idi. So the Gemara says, fine. So that's fine. It's not fine, but meaning, okay, so there is no reconciliation between these two. However, the Rav Asi, Lema, to have it to you after the Rav Asi. Now, isn't the Braisa going against Rav Asi? Because the Braisa says up to six, total dependency. Rav Asi says even at six. The Gemara says that doesn't kill me. So Amalecha Rav Asi Ad Vad Bechlam. Rav Asi will tell you that the way to read the Braisa is that when the Braisa says up to six, it means up to and including. Right? Standard Machlokas throughout all of Shas. When you're given a limit, so is it up to the limit or is it up to and including the limit? So the Gemara says over here, the Braisa means up to and including the limit. Limit to have it to Rav Yana Vereish Lakish. So the Gemara says now, Rav Yana Vereish Lakish. So they don't give numbers as a description, as a parameter of total dependency. They talk about mom wiping the wiping her toddler. They're talking about waking up in the morning, crying out, mommy, mommy. So lokasha had isi avua b'masa adlo isi avua b'masa. So the Gemara says no. That also is not going to be so much of a difficulty on this. So the if dad is in town, so that is not considered total dependency. But if dad happens to be out of town, and the only one in town right now is currently mom, so then that is viewed as total dependency, even up until six. That's what the Braisa is describing. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara here quotes a Braisa more on this discussion on dependence, and is the child necessarily going to be following the Erev of mother and other relationships of dependency? Ma'arva adam ayde beno bito gatanim, ayde avdo v'shivchaso kananim, bein ladatam bein shalo ladatam. So a person makes it his error for his children, for his minor children, for his evidence shivcha kananim, because over there the nature of the relationship is total dependency, and so therefore, with or without their consent, wherever his limits of Shabbos go, that's where theirs goes as well. But for an evid ivri, no, he works for you, and granted, by the way, that he can't quit, but nevertheless, though, the relationship is not a dependency relationship. And so therefore, just because you made an error in one direction doesn't necessarily mean he has to go in that direction. True for an Eved Ivri, true for an Ama Ivriah, and true for your adult children as well. V'lo ayide ishto elamidatam. Same thing for your wife as well, so consent is necessary. Tanya Idach, we learned in another brisa, lo yarev adam, this Bryce is making the same point, is that when it comes to an Evid or Ama Ivriya, or when it comes to your adult children, or when it comes to your wife, consent is necessary. So, and when it comes to the, it's the same point as the previous price. So let's move on. So, v'chulan she'irvu v'iriv aleihen. So, Rabban, Yotzin v'shel Rabban. So, any time that you make an erev on their behalf, so they're going wherever you're going. Chutz min ha'isha, mimnei she'chol limchos. Now, that's not true by your wife, because your wife has the option of dissension. And so the only way that you can make an erev on behalf of your wife is only when you get her consent. So the Gemara says, Isha Maishna. Now, the end of the Braisa, that was a little bit strange. Meaning the point of the end of the Braisa is correct. Your wife can dissent. That's fine. The problem with the end of that Braisa is that it's not just your wife. In other words, what do we learn? Your Eved Ivri and your Amma Ivriya also don't have to follow you. We learned about your adult children also don't have to follow you. So the Gemara says, so why did the Braisa end off with the word with just mentioning one's wife? So Amar Rava Isha V'chol D'damila. So Ravashi says, okay, so let me show you how to read the Braisa. When the Braisa ends with your wife can dissent, it means your wife and anyone who's in that category, your adult children, your Eved Ivri, so they also are in the same category. Wife over here is just a category, not a specific person. Okay. Amar Mar, Chutzman Isha M'mei Sheichol Limchos. So we said that with exception to a wife who can protest. So time of the machia, tama nafka midabala. So the Gemara wants to know now, what if we have a scenario, a situation in which she doesn't say anything. She doesn't affirm, nor does she protest. Stam. So what do we say in that circumstance? So a critical reading of the Braisa would seem to indicate that if she says nothing, so then we're going to assume that she's going to consent. In other words, why wouldn't you want to go where you're walking? So the Gemara says, Haktani Reisha, Elamidatam. The Gemara says, yeah, but if you want to critically read the Braisa, which of course we're supposed to do, so you go back and it says that the only way the wife is going where you're going is only when she affirms that she wants to go where you're going. So my love to Amri in. So the Gemara says now, isn't the understanding of the Braisa is where clearly she says that I want to go where you're going? So the Gemara says no. My elamidatam d'ishtikum. No, datam over here just simply means that she was quiet, and quiet is acquiescence. Lafuge echad amri lo. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you where you know that she doesn't want to go where you're going. Where you say to her before Shabbos, hey, I'm setting up an Erev Tchum because I want to go there on Shabbos. You want to join me? And she says no. So there, okay, now we know what she's thinking. So the Gemara says, ha, v'kulin shirvan v'irvan leim rabban yotzim b'shel rabban v'stamahu v'ktani chutz m'ne'isha d'lo nafke. So the Gemara says, okay, but again, let's go to the end of the Braisa. The end of the Braisa, we said that if you lay down an Erev for them, meaning the people who are dependent upon you, they're going to go wherever you go. And then the Braisa ends off by saying, and this is not true with your wife. Now, in that case over there, there was no information that was given. There was no consent form. And meanwhile, it says that your wife doesn't automatically go with you, even though she didn't say anything. Okay, so it seems like from the end of the Braisa that even if she's quiet, that doesn't assume acquiescence. Amarava kevin she'irvu, ein lecha michui gadol mizeh. So Rava says, well, actions do speak pretty loudly. And if she sets up an erev in another direction, that's a pretty good indication that she does not want to go where you're going. So in the case where she doesn't set up an erev in any direction, and you set up an erev, and she's quiet and she doesn't protest, so then we can assume that that's acquiescence. Good. At the end of the Braisa, however, if she sets up an erev in another direction, so the actions speak pretty loudly that she's not agreeing to the erev that you set up in the direction you want to go in. She wants to literally go in a different direction. Okay, Adkan. Okay, that takes us to the end of the Mishnah, and let's at least begin the next Mishnah. A lot of math coming up, and tomorrow's daf actually has a lot of math coming up in the remainder of today's daf, but at least let's get down the basic principles. Kamihi shi'uro, what is the shear of an Erev? Meaning, how much food do you have to sub for an Erev? So, mazon shtei se'udos. So it has to be equivalent to two meals worth of food. L'chol echad ve'echad. And for every participant. Now, we learned just a couple days ago that when it comes to Eruv echatzero, so we cap. We cap the amount of bread that's necessary. It doesn't have to be two meals worth for everybody. It's a grogerus for every person up until when you get to 18. Once you get to the number 18, 18 grogerus is going to be equivalent to two meals worth. And at that point in time now, a cap has been set so that no more than the two meals worth has to be set for the entire Eruv Echatzeros. Good. A leniency as it relates to Eruv Echatzeros. However, when it comes to Eruv Tchum, it has to be two meals per person. So, two meals per person, l'chol echa v'echa, mezon l'chol v'lo l'Shabbos divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, when we say a meal, what kind of meal are we talking about? Shabbos meal or a weekday meal? So Rabbi Meir says weekday meal. Rabbi Yehuda amar l'Shabbos v'lo l'chol. Rabbi Yehuda says Shabbos meal. V'zeh v'zeh miskaven l'hakel. Now, both are interested in being makel. Now, what does that mean? Rashi explains. It means this as follows. What they're really debating is, do you eat more during a weekday meal or do you eat more during a Shabbos meal? Now, you're probably wondering, how can this possibly be a debate, right? Do we not all overeat on Shabbos? Now, I know I'm talking about myself, but isn't it true that we all overeat on Shabbos? How could we possibly debate when is a larger meal? So as Rashi explains over here, the debate rests on the following. So according to Rav Yehuda, which I just think according to Rav Meir, which I think we can all just easier relate to, and that is that you're going to eat more on Shabbos, right? But that's Shitas Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda will say, not necessarily, because Rav Yehuda says that, look, on Shabbos, you know Shal Shudas is coming. So there are people out there, and they're smart people. And you know, I'd like to think I'm one of them, but whatever. But there are smart people out there who know Shal Shudas is coming, and so therefore they don't overeat on that second meal, on the morning meal here in America, on the afternoon meal. But the people don't overeat in that meal, and because they know that another meal is coming on Shabbos. So Rav Yehuda's argument is that actually on a weekday meal where you don't have that additional meal, so then people tend to eat more during the weekday meal. Anyway, the point is that Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir, they both want to go with the quote unquote smaller meal. I know we're not quantifying over here. This is much more conceptual. But they want to go with the smaller meal, and what they're debating is which one is the smaller meal? Your weekday meal smaller or your Shabbos meal smaller? Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer Mikikar Mipudiyam Midal Sain Bisela. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka actually gives a quantity. How much is a meal? And he basically relates and he connects a ratio between money and how much bread to bake. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to bypass, right? I see the time. I'm going to bypass the actual formula in terms of what it comes out to. But anyway, but he gives an actual quantity. Rabbi Shimon Amar Sheyados Lekikar Mishal Shlekav. And Rabbi Shimon also gives a quantity as well. And what we're going to learn together in the Gemara is that although they're giving two different quantities, actually they're not far apart one from the other. And tomorrow when we actually do the formulas and figure out the quantities we're going to see, they're not that far from one another. Ches Yala Beis HaManuga. Now, once we establish the two meals for an Erev Tchum, half of that for the halachas of Beis HaManuga. Okay, it's a halacha that we've gone over a number of times, and the idea is that if you go into a house that has Sara'as, so at Beis HaManuga, so you become tummy immediately, the clothing that you wear do not become tummy immediately. It's an interesting halacha, a delay of tuma on one's clothing that he is wearing when he goes into a Beis HaManuga. What's the delay? The amount of time that it takes to eat, half of the shear of Erev Tchum. V'chati chasiyal psolas agviya, and in terms of a person eating food that's tameh, that person becoming tameh, that's a rabbinic tuma that's discussed in detail in the beginning of Masechet Shabbos, thereabouts, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet. So that is going to be half of that shear. So in other words, basically the Mishnah is halving the shearim starting from Erev Tchum. Half of that, the delay of tumah for the Beis HaManuga, half of that would be a person becoming tummy if he eats that much tummy food. The kama mazon shtei seudos. So I'm just going to do a little bit of Gemara right now. What is two meals worth of food? And this is a discussion that we find time and again. In that, bizman ha-Gemara, so they needed to convert the language of the Mishnah. The language of the Mishnah goes back to Eretz Yisrael, circa 2nd century. And then what the Amoraim are doing are basically saying, okay, good. How's that translate in our terminology? It's not much different than what we do nowadays. Meaning, how would you convert the Gemara's terminology to the way we speak in our terminology? So this is a common discussion that's had in the Gemara. Basically, I know the Mishnah gives us a definition, but we need a definition for the definition. So v'kama mazon shei seudos, am Rav Yehuda, am Rav Tarti Rifta, ikarta. So Rav Yehuda quotes the name of Rav. It's two loaves that are eaten by the ikarta. Farmers, cowboys, whatever, right? We know, you and I don't know, but basically in their day, so this was a popular type of bread that was eaten by farmers or cowboys, and so Rav Yehuda Marav says two of those rolls. Rav Adar Bava Amar Tarti Rifta Nahar Papisa, and Rav Adar Bava also gives a contemporary, again, in quotes, contemporary to his time, a contemporary example of the kinds of breads that make up, that qualify as these two meals. Tarte rifta nahar papita. Okay, two loaves of bread by this particular river. So Amalei Rav Yosef leRav Yosef Brei the Rav Avucha Kaman Svirle. Who does your father follow, like Rabbi Meir Svirle? So Aninami Rabbi Meir Svirle. Are we talking about the which meal is less, the Shabbos meal or the weekday meal? So the Gemara paskins the way I would have, not paskin, I don't have a say in this matter, but if I had to guess, I would have guessed that the weekday meals are smaller than the Shabbos meals. Anyway, that's the Gemara says. Good. Dika Rav Yehuda. Look, Rav Yehuda's argument is that Shabbos meals are smaller. He says that's really hard to argue. And he says, Kasha Hadami Inshi. You know what people say? Ravcha Lebesima Shchiach. When it comes to sweet food, people always have more room for sweet food. As the expression here goes, there's always room for dessert. So the Gemara says, right, Shabbos, we're eating the most delicious food. It's really hard to imagine that our weekday meals are coming out smaller than our Shabbos meals. That our Shabbos meals are smaller than the weekday meals. The Gemara says Rameir's position really resonates. That the weekday meals are smaller, so we're going to use the weekday meal as our parameter of the seuda necessary in order to set up an Erev Tchum. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow's the math, so we'll hold off all mathematical equations to tomorrow in terms of trying to figure out the two meals worth, the Shiurim in our Mishnah of Rav Yochanan ben Broka and that of Rabbi Shimon. So all that to come up tomorrow. In the meantime, however, let's recap. We start off our discussion today by limiting the scope of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you give money to the baker who's living in your chatzer. So the Chachamim say that doesn't work. The Gemara significantly limited the scope of that halacha. Good. Rav Yehuda says that when it comes to Eruv Chatzer, no consent is necessary based on the principle of Zach L'Adam Shalom B'Fanav. The discussion that we had is the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Is Rav Yehuda arguing with the Chachamim? In our sugya, the answer is yes. But we have Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan say that when Rav Yochanan opens up with the words Bamedvar Mamorim, which he does over here, at least according to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, so it's Eino Ela Lafarsh, but according to Rav Yochanan, it's coming to be Cholek. So a discussion, Rav Yehuda arguing with the Tanakama, is he agreeing with the Tanakama? So in our sugya, the Gemara's conclusion was yes. In general, machlokes between Rav Yeshua ben Levi and Rav Yochanan, based on the opening words of Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah, when he says the word Amasai versus when he says the words Bamedvar Mamorim. And the Gemara cited the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, another example where Rav Yehuda said Bamedvar Mamorim, sorry. In the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, he said the word Amasai, and we know that somebody's arguing with Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says that's true, but not the Tanakama. In other words, we have another Tana elsewhere that may be arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, but not the Tanakama. Tanakama agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Good. That was the end of the seventh parak. In the beginning of the eighth parak, so you're making a Erev Tchum on behalf of a group of people. You could do so. You could sponsor it. But everyone has to abide by it, agree to it, prior to the beginning of Shabbos. A couple of points that we made in the beginning of the eighth parak. One, you can only make up an Erev Tchum for Dvar Mitzvah, like the examples that are given in the Mishnah. Two, our Mishnah is not necessarily a referendum on Breira, although you could have said that. The Gemara says we don't have to say that. And three, and the third point is that we discussed dependency that took us into the Amud Beis of today's Daf. A child who's totally dependent on the mother, so is going to be subscribing to the Tchum of whatever mom is. And then a discussion of what is the age of total dependency. And that was a lengthier discussion that we had in the bottom of the Amud Alf that spilled into the top of the Amud Beis. A wife, is she going to go wherever the husband goes on Shabbos? Is his Tchum going to include his wife? So if she agrees, obviously yes. If she dissents, obviously no. If, let's say, she is quiet, is the silence acquiescence? So we said the conclusion of the Gemara was yes. Unless she sets up another Erev Tchum, which is another form, it's dissension in the form of action. And then finally, we started the next Mishnah. Mazon Shtei Seudos. When you're putting down your Erev Tchum, it has to be two meals worth. What is two meals worth? So first of all, Machlokes Rameir and Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah, weekday meal, Shabbos meal, and each one of them interested in giving a more lenient position, arguing which one is a smaller meal. weekday meal or Shabbos meal? The Gemara's conclusion, like Rabbi Meir, the weekday meal is smaller, Shabbos meal is larger. The next part of the Mishnah is a machlokus between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka in terms of the actual quantity of two meals worth. And what we're going to start tomorrow in the Gemara is at the two dots, where the Gemara there is going to give us actual amounts, shiurim, in terms of what did Rabbi Shimon mean, what did Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka mean, what is the actual difference between them, all coming up tomorrow.